Welcome, everybody. Welcome to today's episode of The Law of Self-Defense. I am, of course, Attorney Andrew Branker for The Law of Self-Defense. So glad you could all be here. Make sure we're streaming the way we're supposed to be streaming. And pin this up here. And it looks like everything is going just fine. All right. So pleased you were all here. And we're going to talk today about some of the limits on the Texas unique, infamous provision for the use of deadly force in self-defense. This is a story that I covered back in October when it first popped up on Twitter, although the event itself actually took place a year earlier in 2022. And we've just had what I would consider an enormously favorable outcome for the shooter, the defender here. Really good luck for him. Much better than the media seems to realize reporting on this. But this is the story. So this was a Texas gun store. The gentleman we see on the right of the thumbnail here just walked into the store, walked right over to a register, rifled it for cash, started walking out of the store when he was pursued and ultimately shot twice in the back by the gentleman here on the left. Lawfully armed owner, or at least worker within the store. That man who was shot would end up dying, and the shooter would end up charged with murder. Murder in this case. So we're going to look at some of the news reports when it happened, when the indictment for murder came down in Texas. This is Houston. And we'll watch the video of this event that was captured on surveillance camera, and then we'll talk about the outcome, the legal resolution that occurred just last week. So with that out of the way, let me go ahead and start the launch of today's show. Take a quick look at the comments, making sure no one's trying to alert me to anything. All right, audio and video are good. Glad to hear it. So today's show is sponsored by none other than Law of Self-Defense itself. Twice a year, only twice a year, I teach a live full day Law of Self-Defense course. The next one's coming up, April 20th, Saturday, April 20th. We cover how the criminal justice system perceives and evaluates claims of self-defense, what makes a case an attractive target for prosecution, in other words, what you should avoid doing. We talk, of course, in great depth about the five elements of self-defense. We talk about defense not just of yourself, but defense of others, your family, neighbors, colleagues, strangers, active shooter type events, and how each of these raises different kinds of risks from a justification perspective. We talk about defense of property, both highly defensible property like your home, business, occupied motor vehicle, as well as least defensible property, which includes things like your pets. We talk about interacting with the police in the aftermath of a use of force event. We spend almost an hour on that alone. That's how complex and subtle a topic that is. All of this translates the legalese into plain English. If you go to our registration site, information site, lawofselfdefense.com/advanced, we have over 100 bulleted specific legal questions that we answer in plain English. More than 100, folks. Check it out, lawofselfdefense.com/advanced. And right now, we're still in the early registration period. So if you sign up now, you save up to 50% off your registration. Folks, if you miss this Saturday, April 20th class, and by the way, if you have a conflict with that date, I would urge you to register anyway, because we're going to make the playback version of the class available to all the registered students for at least 2 weeks after that date, so you can watch it at your leisure over a couple-week period if you have a conflict on Saturday, April 20th. And if you miss that date, it's at least another 6 months. It's at least October 2024 before we'll do this class again. Can you afford to wait? Do you know when you're going to be attacked? I suggest you don't. It's up to the bad guy when that happens. You need this insight, this knowledge, this expertise on board so you can effectively and decisively defend yourself, your family, your property, while knowing, having the confidence to know that you're reducing your legal risk to as close to zero as possible. Learn more at lawofselfdefense.com/advanced. All right, so we are here to talk about this shooting. And I think I'll start with the first news report that occurred at the time. Oh, I guess it wasn't 2022. My mistake. It looks like it was 2023 when this happened. Let me pull this up. Video shows employee shooting unarmed man in the back while running out of the store. See if I can make this bigger so we can actually read it. The parents of a Houston man killed by a Carter's Country employee are speaking out for the first time, asking justice for their son who was shot in the back while running out of the store. We want justice. He took the life of our son. The family of Terry Evans Jr., the person who was shot and killed, fleeing from the gun store with a handful of cash from the store's register, spoke up publicly for the first time. Oh, the event was 2022. It's also the first time we've seen the surveillance video of the incident, which contradicts initial reports of what happened on June 21st, 2022. The video shows Terry walking into Carter's Country Store and heading to the cash register. He grabs something that appears to be money, that makes sense, and walks towards the door. A woman employee runs towards him on the right, and then a man runs after him while shooting. And I'm going to play that surveillance video in just a moment, folks. The surveillance video on the outside of the building captures the moment that Terry ran out, and then a bullet that pierced through his body from the back exits the front, hitting the glass door of the store. Terry then runs out with the store employee following, still shooting. He turns his back to run out the door, and the employee shoots, his mother said. Not only one time, he shot him twice. And to me, he didn't even think. To me, he was just wanting to kill somebody. Let's see. Then there's, I guess, their cell phone video of Evans laying on the pavement bleeding. He would die from those two gunshot wounds. The family's attorney. What does the family's attorney have to say? In Texas, you're only justified in using deadly force if you feel like you're in fear of imminent death or serious bodily injury. Well, that's a lie. that's just not true, as we'll see in a moment. Texas is the one state in the nation that allows for the use of deadly force in defense of property, even just personal property, not just highly defensible property like your home. Many states have special provisions for the use of deadly force in defense of highly defensible property. That's why highly defensible property is different than least defensible property. But Texas is the one state that has provision for the use of deadly defensive force in defense of mere personal property in the utter absence of any threat to persons. So this statement, in Texas, you're only justified in using deadly force if you feel like you're in fear of imminent death or serious bodily injury, is simply not true in Texas. Now, as we'll see, to qualify for that Texas provision for the use of deadly force in defense of mere personal property, there's a bunch of conditions and hoops that have to be jumped through. And if you miss the hoops, any one of them, you don't qualify for the privilege to use deadly force in defense of mere personal property. And then you've just unlawfully killed someone. Then you've committed murder or manslaughter. And off to prison you go for a very long time. We'll take a look at that Texas defense of personal property statute, deadly force in defense of personal property statute in just a moment. The family attorney says he points out that initial police reports that Terry had a sharp object and that the employee who shot him feared for his life. However, Gibson points out that the surveillance video shows Terry only had a styrofoam cup. In addition, several employees who testified in video recorded depositions said they never feared for their lives during the encounter. There were four workers there that day. Three of them that have access to guns did not shoot Mr. Evans. One did. Three people acted reasonably. One person did not, according to the victim's family lawyer. Let's see. He continued. Dixon. What is this? Oh, the NAACP president, Bishop James Dixon. He said shoplifting is clearly wrong and that employees should have called the police. However, it should not be a death sentence. With someone running out the door, it would have just have been easier to close the door, lock it, and call the police. Of course, then you've lost your property, right? Then the money's gone. I definitely think the district attorney, from my perspective, should be filing charges against the person who fired those shots. Who's the district attorney in Houston? None other than Kim Ogg, a George Soros purchased prosecutor in Houston. District Attorney Kim Ogg's, and by the way, of course, the shooter, as we'll see, was white, and the thief here was a black man, would not comment on the case, citing the fact that it had not been presented to a grand jury. The shooter's attorney would also not comment, and neither would lawyers representing the gun store. The family of Terry Evans Jr., the thief, acknowledged that Terry had a criminal history and mental health issues, but they point out he was also a caring dad to his three young sons. Is that relevant to a self-defense case? No. Or a defense of property case. Let's see. All right, that's about it for that story. So let's take a look at the video tape of the surveillance video. I guess I didn't pull it up. Here, I've got it. Don't worry. I've got it. It's right here. Okay, I'll make myself smaller so we have the... Whoops, I didn't want it to play yet. Okay, wait. All right, so here is Evans Jr. He's just walked into the store, and he makes a beeline right for the register. He's not there to purchase anything. The store is open for business, of course, and that's important because when a store, when a commercial business is open to the public, there's at least an implied consent to enter, right? They want their customers to enter. So there's implied consent to enter. So he comes in, sees the register, goes right for the register. Pops it open, grabs the cash, and now he's come to the attention of store employees. There's a woman on the right there who's going to pursue him. And we have the shooter, gun out already, running around the corner of that display to pursue him. And he'll bring him under fire pretty quickly. So he comes around, shoots him there, chases him out of the store, and shoots him, fires a shot right there, shoots him again. So the thief, gets shot twice in the back, would succumb to his injuries and not survive. So certainly when this shot is fired, you can't argue that you're firing in defense of yourself or another store employee. Maybe when this shot is fired, you could argue he's still in the store. I thought I saw something sharp in his hands. My co-employee is right there. Not sure it's a strong argument, but it can be made. But this shot right there is a recoil. He's what, 20 feet away, running in the opposite direction. So he's not presenting as a threat to you or apparently to anybody else at this moment. So in any other state but Texas, there'd simply be no legal justification for firing this shot. In Texas, however, we do have a legal provision for the use of force in defense of property. That's where things get a little complicated. So let me pull that up. Go back over here. And if you want to read this at your leisure, folks, you can. It's we have a shortcut URL. This is Texas Penal Code 9.42. You can find this statute at lawofselfdefense.com/942 because it comes up that often. So Texas Penal Code, Title 2, General Principles of Criminal Responsibility, Chapter 9, Justification, that excludes criminal responsibility, Subchapter D, Protection of Property, Section 9.42, Deadly Force to Protect Property, and they mean here personal property. They have a separate statute that addresses defense of highly defensible property, like your home, your business, your occupied vehicle. This is defense of mere personal property, items, a laptop, cash that's grabbed, a pet. Pet is mere personal property, folks. I hate to say it, but I know it bothers a lot of you, but that's the way it is. In most states, you simply have no legal privilege to use deadly force in defense of mere personal property, period. They don't let you kill people over stuff. But Texas does, if you meet all the conditions. Now, the first condition here in this statute is that before you can use deadly force in self-defense, you have to meet all the conditions for using non-deadly force in self-defense. That's this reference to 9.41, the immediately preceding statute. I'm not going to go through all that. We're focusing just on deadly force here. So, but if you would meet all the conditions of 9.41, you're justified in using deadly force to protect tangible, movable property like the cash from that register when the defender reasonably believes the deadly force is immediately necessary to prevent the other's imminent commission of, and then there's a bunch of enumerated crimes. More relevant here is to prevent, subparagraph B, to prevent the other who is fleeing immediately after committing, and there's an enumerated list of crimes here, burglary, robbery, aggravated robbery, or theft during the nighttime from escaping with the property. Also, there's additional conditions. You have to believe the property can't be protected by any other means, and the use of other means to defend the property would put you at risk of death or serious bodily harm. Let's presume those conditions are met. The problem we really have here is that we don't really meet the conditions of B. So what was this act of taking the money out of the register? It needs to be one of these enumerated property crimes. It needs to be a burglary, a robbery, an aggravated robbery, or a theft during the nighttime. Now, first of all, this wasn't a robbery. So a robbery is the unlawful taking of property by threat of force. And if it's deadly force threat, then it's an aggravated robbery. But Evans doesn't threaten anybody with force here. He simply walks into the store, takes the property, and runs out. So it's not a robbery or an aggravated robbery. It's a theft, but it's not a theft during the nighttime. These are daytime hours. So that doesn't apply either. Could it be a burglary? Well, what is a burglary, generally speaking? A burglary is entering property for the purpose of committing a crime within that property. Well, that happens here. But the Texas definition of burglary is more specific than that. Let's take a look at that. Texas, burglary. And they have several definitions of burglary here. This is Penal Code 30.02. A person commits the offense of burglary if, without the effective consent of the owner, and that's the key phrase here, without the effective consent of the owner. Doesn't have to be explicit, doesn't have to be in writing. The effective consent of the owner, the person enters a habitation or building or any portion of a building, not there, then open to the public, with intent to commit a theft. Here we have the theft. Or they remain concealed in a building, or, which doesn't apply here, or they enter a building or habitation and attempt to commit a theft. Well, Evans clearly comes in and commits a theft, right? So certainly his conduct meets at least paragraph 3 here. Here we have an intent to commit a theft. So you have an additional dilemma. Now you have to, did he walk into the building with the intent of stealing? I would suggest yes, just from common sense. But we have a stronger case here because it doesn't require an intent to steal. It requires an attempt. Either he does it or he attempts to do it, which clearly happens here. So he enters the building and he commits a theft. Is that burglary? Well, the trouble is, for that argument, is he has to have entered the building without the consent of the owner. Well, he has consent to enter the building. It's a business open to the public. So there's implied consent to come in. Now, it gets a little trickier, more ambiguous, when we talk about this detail. Does he have consent to go behind the counter? Well, you might argue no. But it's not like there's a barrier he has to overcome. If a normal customer walked around that counter, would you charge them with trespassing? Because they don't have consent to be on that particular square footage of the store. Probably not. Now, I think you could make the argument either way. There are Texas cases. There is Texas appellate case law where people entered property with the permission of the property owner. And then committed a theft, and they were still guilty of burglary because the permission of the property owner was given under conditions of fraud. So they approached the property owner and said, hey, we're here to inspect for leaks in the roof. And the property owner said, oh, okay, come on in, inspect for leaks. Because they gained that consent under conditions of fraud, it was not effective consent. So they were still guilty of burglary when they entered under fraud and then stole property. There's other case law in Texas that says in which a gentleman entered a commercial building like a customer, asked if he could use the water fountain, and he was given permission to do that. So there's effective consent there. But then he went into a closed conference room and stole property from the conference room. He was still convicted of burglary because although he was given effective consent to use the water cooler, he was not given consent to go into the conference room. So that lacked effective consent, but that was a separate room. That's a more explicit arrangement than someone simply stepping behind a counter. And in fact, George Soros purchased Houston prosecutor Kim Ogg did ultimately file charges against this gun store. Let's pull up that news report. Gun store employee charged in shooting death of alleged shoplifter in Southwest Houston. So the problem is, to get back to this, here's the dilemma. Where did I put my... Everything for the shooter now is hinging on this question of effective consent and whether or not a jury would agree that effective consent had not been granted. Now, maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't. You don't know. You don't know what kind of jury you're going to get. You don't know if you're going to be in the media for a year and a half being portrayed as a racist murderer of a father of three, shot him in the back as he was running away. That's certainly how the family lawyer portrayed the shooting in the first article we read about the event. The jury's going to see the cell phone video footage of Evans bleeding out on the street. Over what? Over some cash? Now, listen, I know plenty of you believe the question is not whether you value your property more than you value human life. The question is, did the thief value his life more than he valued your property? Because he was willing to die for it. That was the risk he knew he was incurring. But nevertheless, a jury might not agree. And now you've killed someone. And either it was a justified use of deadly force in defense of property, or it was murder. And you don't get to decide. It's not up to you or whoever the defender is. It's up to the jury. And if I have to put you in front of a jury, at best, there's at least a 10% chance of getting convicted. Under the best scenario, that's just the noise in the system. And if the case is politically or racially energized, as this one certainly would be, it's probably a 50% chance of getting convicted. And it's not like it's black or white in terms of the law here. It all hinges on that question of, did he have effective consent? So here's this other news article here. Gun store employee charged. An employee accused of shooting a man in the back, well, he not just accused of doing that, he would be consenting to doing that and saying, yeah, I shot him in the back twice, and I was justified. It was lawful defense of property, would be the shooter's argument. An employee accused of shooting a man in the back while he ran out of a Southwest Houston gun store in June 2022 has been charged with murder. Life in prison without possibility of early release if you're convicted. Mark Winger is accused of shooting and killing Terry Evans, who was seen on surveillance video with his hand in the cash register at Carter's Country Store. In video obtained, this is all, there's no real news here. So I just wanted to share this article to show that, when is this? In October 2023, last year, so more than a year after the shooting was June 2022. In October 2023, he was charged with murder. That's when this case came to my attention. It was last October that I did my first show on this shooting event. And I covered much of the legal dynamics there. And then we have last week's article. So keep in mind, where are we now? We have this Mark Winger, the employee of the gun store, has been charged with murder, and he has a legal defense argument to make. But is it a lock? Is he certain he's not going to get convicted of murder and sentenced to life in prison without possibility of early release? He might win and he might lose. And if he loses, he's away forever. It's not a great place to be. This is the outcome they have from last week. Gun store employee gets 8 years probation for fatally shooting suspected shoplifter in Southwest Houston. Actually, what he got was way better than 8 years probation. 8 years probation would mean you're convicted of murder or manslaughter, and he ends up pleading, in a sense, to manslaughter. 8 years is when you plead guilty, you take the conviction. Now you're a convicted felon, guilty of manslaughter, and they give you 8 years probation instead of putting you right into prison, which would be not a terrible outcome for this defendant. If I was his attorney, I'd have to have a hard conversation with him about whether or not to take this deal when the risk is life in prison without possibility of early release. But in fact, the deal he got is much better than 8 years probation. A gun store employee who shot and killed a thief as he was running away will spend no time in prison. Well, 8 years probation would do that for him, but again, it's better. Mark Winger, 59, pleaded guilty to a lesser charge of manslaughter. Again, he'd been charged with murder in exchange for 8 years of deferred adjudication and the chance to avoid prison. What's the difference between probation and deferred adjudication? With probation, you're forever guilty of that crime that you pled to. You're a felon. Can't have guns. Hard to get a job. Can't vote. With deferred adjudication, you have a guilty verdict hanging over your head, but you're not really guilty. As long as you meet the conditions of the deferred adjudication, and that's what he has for 8 years, 8 years of conditions, mostly meaning don't commit another crime, the criminal charge goes away and you're not guilty of anything. You're not a convicted felon. It's as if the event didn't happen. And for normal law-abiding people, it's not that hard to do. Now, criminals get jammed up on this all the time. Most common thing in the world is for a typical criminal defendant to get a deferred adjudication and screw it up and get caught committing another crime. And then, of course, the original charge, the plea you took, goes into full effect and you just get sentenced. But for a normal law-abiding person, we generally don't get exposed to felony charges very often, hopefully never. So what Mark Winger has to do is not get in legal trouble for 8 years, and then all this goes away, legally speaking, as if it never happened. This is an unbelievable deal for him. I don't know who his defense lawyer is. And of course, one win does not make a legal career. But man, this is a hell of an outcome. I would definitely note, if you're in the Houston area and you want to, people ask me for lawyer recommendations all the time, even though they don't need a lawyer in the moment. They just want a name in their Rolodex in case they need one. If you can find out who this defense lawyer is, I'd give this guy a hard look, because this is an unbelievable outcome. Oh, here he is. Defense attorney. Oh, I don't know if this is his attorney. Oh, no, he's not connected to the case, so it's not him. Oh, here he is. Winger's attorney, Zach Fertitta. Fertitta. I would note that name, folks. If you're in the Houston area, write that down. Save it in a safe place. I don't know if his entire legal career is reflected in this outcome, but this is an amazing outcome. Yeah, I probably wouldn't keep my job working in the gun store, which is, you know, obviously kind of a, can be a magnet for bad actors. But if I were Mr. Winger, but this is amazing. All right. So that's what I wanted to share with you, kind of put the bow on this, Houston gun store shooting that I'd covered before for the law of self-defense community. All right. So, let me see. Now I'm going to take questions from the Law of Self-Defense membership. They get their questions answered for free. That's one of the benefits of being a Law of Self-Defense member. You too could be a Law of Self-Defense member. Get all your questions during these live streams answered for free. And that's what we're going to do now. You can become a member right now for just 99 cents. Get a 2-week trial membership at Law of Self-Defense, unlimited member privileges, get all your questions and comments answered for free, get transcripts of the shows, member-only content, much, much more. And for 99 cents. And after the 2 weeks, it's still dirt cheap, folks. It's only about 30 cents a day, less than $10 a month to be a Law of Self-Defense member. A month, $10 a month to get all your legal questions answered for free during these live streams. Check that out at lawofselfdefense.com/trial. Sign up right now and you'll immediately be sent instructions for how to join us on the live stream. lawofselfdefense.com/trial. Or if you insist and you're watching this on YouTube, where we simulstream much of our content, you can also pose a question or comment, but I won't see it unless it's a $10 minimum super chat. I don't know why you would do that. I don't recommend it, but it makes more sense just to be a member and get all your questions answered for a month for 10 bucks, not just $10 a question, but there you go. All right. Jack asks, how big does a portion of a building have to be to qualify for a burglary? Obviously, the warehouse in the back behind labeled doors, employees only, would qualify. or the manager owner's office with a shut door? How about a cash register the thief had to open? I don't think the cash register being open is what the statute contemplates. I think it contemplates what you described, that there's segregated areas of the store that are closed off and posted, where customers are not supposed to be. Because the law wants to distinguish between shoplifting and burglary. Burglary is a much more serious criminal offense than shoplifting. And it doesn't want to treat shoplifters like burglars. And the way it draws a line between those two is by having this effective consent in a portion of a building. But it's going to be expected, the portion of the building, that it would be clear to someone that they're entering a portion of the building they're not supposed to enter. Clearly, if it's closed off, if there's doors, if it's posted, that would satisfy that requirement. Absent that, just an open walkway behind the counter, I think becomes much more tentative. Jack goes on, if he'd stolen the cash register, that's theft. If he opened it without permission with the intention to steal money, could it be burglary? I don't think the opening of the register does that. I mean, Texas has a different burglary statute, the next one, after 30.02, it's 30.03, and it involves coin collection devices. You put coins into something in a detergent dispenser in a laundromat kind of thing, or the coin acceptor on the washing machine or dryer at the laundromat. You pry that open with a screwdriver and steal the money. That would be popping open a container that contains money to steal it. But the fact that the legislature explicitly provides for that with respect to coin-operated devices and doesn't do that for cash registers, that suggests to me that they don't intend the opening of the cash register to be an exceptional event. Let's see. Jack asks, would there be a difference if he'd stolen a gun and ammo instead of cash? As far as I know, a gun is property, no difference. The difference would be if he'd stolen a gun. The gun itself is just personal property. But a gun allows for the projection of force. And someone who's running away from you could still just turn their arm backwards and shoot you with the gun. I mean, that actually happens, not rarely. So you could argue that someone who's fleeing from you still remains an imminent deadly force threat to you if they have a gun in hand. That's hard to argue if they don't have a gun in hand. So in that sense, the gun, if you'd stolen the gun, it would make a difference because you'd have a tenable defense of person argument. Here, you don't really have a defense of person argument because the thief is unarmed. So if he's 20 feet away running away, he's not presenting as an imminent threat to you. A gun would change that. In terms of the defense of property argument, the gun wouldn't change anything. So say it was a gun the defender knew to be inoperable. Well, then it's just an object. It's not a deadly weapon capable of projecting force. And then we'd be back solely to a defense of property argument justification. Let's see. Yeah, so Dan says, making a remark, I get to break the law and do what I want with impunity, but you don't dare return the favor, which seems to be the attitude of criminals, right? And certainly this surviving family. We might like to live in a world where someone commits an unlawful act against you or your property, and that gives you unlimited license to use force against them. But we don't live in that world. In 49 states, you can't use deadly force, period, in defense of personal property, in the absence of a threat to persons. But of course, if there's a threat to persons, then it's a defense of persons scenario, not really a defense of property scenario. Texas is the one state that does have some provision for the use of deadly force in defense of mere personal property, but we just saw how conditional that is. And if you miss any of the conditions, if you don't meet those conditions, it's just an unlawful killing. It's just murder or manslaughter. David said, I went behind the counter at Walmart to retrieve ammo for a purchase. An employee appeared and objected, and I replied, I'm also a checkout cashier here. Well, I guess in the modern era, we're all checkout cashiers, right? If you do the self-checkout. Paul says, my overriding issue is shooting someone over some money from the register. If this had been at night, this shooting would have been lawful. Theft in the nighttime. You're still shooting someone over money. whether that's the right thing to do, I think reasonable people can differ. Other states could, if they wished, as a matter of public policy, adopt a provision for deadly force in defense of mere personal property. There's nothing unconstitutional about the Texas provision. Just other states have chosen not to. Every state could choose to allow that if they wished, as a matter of public policy. Jack says, in Texas, you have to use force to enter for it to be classed as a burglary. For instance, if your door is wide open and someone walks in, it's not burglary. If they have to open the screen or door, they used force to enter, then they don't have to kick the door in. I haven't looked that closely into Texas burglary law, but it makes sense. But if that's true, then, you know, that goes against the defense here in this event, because the thief didn't have to open anything to go behind the counter. Right. There was not like it's not like the counter was hinged even and he had to lift it to step through. I wonder if the gun store has changed that now. Let's see. Someone mentioned, I did see on the YouTube comment speaking about the defense attorney saying he was well known in the area. I'm going to have to Google him. Someone says, Fertitta is a powerful family in the Houston area. I've never heard of them, but that's the name of the lawyer who did this case, and this is a tremendous outcome for the defense here. Let's see. Will Parker. Hey, Will, how you doing, man? Up in Montana, Will Parker, graduate of the Law Self-Defense Instructor Program. Self-Defense Instructor up in the Glacier National Park area of Montana. It says, dude should become an at-home customer service rep. Yeah, don't go outside for 8 years. Jack says, I didn't realize he got deferred. Great outcome. I guess his attorney didn't have a chance to argue burglary, just negotiated a great deal. Yeah, that's a great deal. Maybe the Soros DA was afraid of losing the next election. I don't know. I don't follow the politics in Houston. Most prosecutor races, if you're willing to drop $100,000 into the race, you just bought that office. And Soros is willing to do that. He does that routinely. So there'd need to be an opponent that had similar kinds of resources to bring to bear. So the family did sue, and the family got a mostly confidential settlement. Certainly the terms of money were confidential. So I don't know how much money they got. That'll partly be a function of, generally you can't get too much money out of an individual because most individuals don't have all that much money, but presumably the store had commercial insurance and that insurance company paid out. The shooter was an employee of the store here. So the store's responsible for the actions of their employee within the scope of his employment. Alan says, are you even allowed to pursue a thief with a weapon? Yeah, you are. There's nothing wrong about pursuing someone and you have the weapon in order to defend yourself should they become violent. The trouble is if you end up using the weapon, then someone could argue, well, you used it in defense of property unlawfully. And you're going to say, no, I was using it to defend myself. And now you have the risk that the jury's not going to buy your argument and will buy the guilty narrative and off to prison you go. Would I pursue someone who stole personal property of mine with a weapon in hand? I doubt it. Jeffrey asked, do all states have deferred adjudication as an option if the prosecutor agrees? To my knowledge, they all do, yes. I would be shocked if any didn't. But the prosecution does have to agree. And the judge, by the way, has to agree too. The prosecutor can make a deal and the judge can say, I don't like that deal. I'm not signing off on that. Dan says, no dispute that the shot wasn't legally justified, just venting my frustrations at criminals, selective love for the law. Yeah. Kyle says, I've been critical of placing a register so close to the front. I'm betting this guy saw that earlier and knew this was a place to hit. Plus, it's an older register if it could open that easily. Yeah, by the way, the Evans, the thief here, had just, this gun store was in a strip mall. He had just been in another business in a strip mall trying to steal stuff. And he'd been chased out of that store. And he just walked out of that store, walked a couple stores over, and walked into the gun store to commit a theft there. Lawful to Shoot says, what if there were gates with warning signs, employees only do not enter at both ends of the entrance to behind? Then I think you'd have a much stronger argument for the defense that this was burglary. And if it was burglary, then defense of property is simply lawful. Psycho Boy says, legal to use force non-deadly to stop someone in the act of taking and running with your property. Yes, you can use, generally speaking, you can use non-deadly force to defend personal property. Now, even then, there are often conditions. So often the taking of the property has to be from your possession. So you're not just observing it from a distance. It has to be your property, not someone else's property, or your property or the property of an immediate family member, but a stranger's property wouldn't qualify unless you had a legal duty to protect your, you know, you're a loss prevention agent. Or that other person may, sometimes if they ask for your help, then you would have a privilege to defend their property, but sometimes not. So the defense of persons law, self-defense and defense of others is very consistent across the 50 states, about 80% consistent. Defense of property law varies enormously across the 50 states, the conditions that have to be met, the limitations on the privilege. So unless you really know it well, I'd be very, very cautious about using any force in defense of property. But generally speaking, you can use non-deadly force. The trouble is, if things escalate to deadly force, then will you be characterized as having used deadly force in defense of property unlawfully? Big O, don't you think the woman behind the counter was in fear of injury, making this a robbery? I mean, she's running towards the thief. Is that what you do when you're in fear of injury? You get closer to the danger? Let's see. And he wasn't threatening her. I mean, that's what robbery requires, is the threat of force. The use of force or the threat of force. So if someone's really just a shoplifter and they're not threatening force, for someone else to claim, well, they weren't threatening me, but I was still in fear of injury, I think that's a hard sell. Again, the law wants to distinguish between shoplifting and burglary and robbery. That's why they're defined differently. And that's why the penalties for burglary and robbery are so much more severe than they are for shoplifting. All right, folks, I think that's all the comments. So we have a snow apocalypse coming to Denver. We're expecting between 2 and 3 feet of snow. So I've pre-recorded a show for tomorrow Thursday, I guess, Thursday the 14th. And then I have a variety of actual nuts and bolts legal work and some travel stuff coming up. So the next couple of weeks is going to be mostly pre-recorded shows. Just be aware of that, law self-defense members. So the members and who normally watch our live streams at noon Eastern time, keep in mind, we may do a live stream I expect, but some of the days over the next couple of weeks are going to be pre-recorded. So those shows won't be in the live stream area. They'll be on the law self-defense blog. And typically they'll become available the same time we would do a live stream. So noon Eastern time. I'll put a notice when that happens up on the live stream area, but sometimes you guys don't read what I put there. So giving you a heads up now. All right. So with that done, I'll just remind all of you, if you carry a gun, so you're hard to kill. So your family is hard to kill. That's why I carry a gun. That's why I've carried a gun my whole adult life. So me and my family are hard to kill. Then you also owe it to yourself and your family to make sure you know the law, so you're hard to convict as well. Until next time, I remain attorney Andrew Branker for the Law of Self-Defense. Stay safe.